The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With me is Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics in the School of Law and Government at Dublin City University, Kieran Mullooly, Independent Ireland MEP, and Maya Dunphy, broadcaster. And Gary, given your expertise in this area, you can explain to us, because Conor McGregor is all over the front pages of the papers. Sunday Times is saying Musk is meddling with Ireland by aiding McGregor and using him effectively as a straw man to push the right-wing immigration debate. The Mail on Sunday saying that TDs are lined up to stop McGregor's bid for the Oirs, and then the Sunday Independent talking about whether or not the DPP is going to take charges against him over inciting the city riots. However, the thing that a lot of them are pointing out in the middle of their coverage is there isn't really a snowball's chance that his presidential bid can work because of the nomination system. Explain.
Yeah, so he's on the front pages and the big headlines in the Sunday Times, the Mail on Sunday and the Sunday Indo. And the big problem is certainly how would he get on the ballot. So there are a few rules about presidential elections. To run, you need to be a citizen of Ireland, you need to be over 35 years of age, and you need to get on the ballot by dint of 20 members of the Oireachtas, so 20 Fianna Fáilers, Fine Gaelers, Independents, Cóch Sinn Féin, a combination of whatever, are the nominations of four county councils. And a county council can only nominate one person, so Cork County Council or Fingal couldn't nominate Maya Dunphy and Kieran Mullooly together. So, and that's
their lot.
Right. Indeed. But that's the issue. So how does, so could McGregor get on the ballot? There's no chance in the Oireachtas, I would have thought. The party system would basically shut him out. Could he get some of those sort of what we call regional independents? Well, a few of them are in government, so that rules them out, and there's not enough other type of independence, I would suggest. So the Sharon Keoghans of this world, there might be five or six of them, but there's not 20. So then can he go to the council route? Now, it would make great theatre. He'd have a huge media entourage as he rocked up at, you know, Meath County Council, Fingal, Laois, Cork, Leitrim, all over the country. So you can imagine the fun and games. Now, county councils have started to flex their muscles, certainly in 2011 and 18, in putting people on the ballot. So Joan Freeman, Mary Davis, David Norris, a whole range of people got elected or got put on the ballot through that route. But would he pick up a majority? And I remember since the local elections, when we had the return of the centrists of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael dominating the councils, very difficult to see. Could they say, well, you know, if he's interested, do we have the right to deny him? And you could imagine, whatever the papers are like now in March, in September, he could be going around saying, the people of Ireland want me and the councils won't give me a nomination. And how might that play out? But, you know, time would move on. So I remain deeply sceptical of his chances.
Is there any council, even if you take away the party whip or the party influence, depending on the way the councils are met, is there any council that is going to stand over nominating somebody where a judge has said that a jury determined that he had raped somebody?
No, it's the short answer. I can't see how any council would nominate him. So I've laid out the sort of the difficulties in terms of the politics of it. But you get to the nub of the matter, as you often do, in terms of the that this comes down to people. And like let's be frank about it, he's a kind of an unlikable character, really, for the most part. I mean,
for the most part.
I don't see any great redeeming features in him. I mean, he talks a lot of nonsense. I mean, my favourite was that he had the power to both summon and dismiss the Dáil. No, just for clarification, no, he doesn't. And never would have. You know, and a government could chain a president into not leaving the country. I mean, technically, presidents need the permission of the government to leave the country.
Go a little bit further on this, because one of the things that has cropped up now a lot on social media is people discussing this prospect and saying, well, you can't form a government without the permission of the president, and you can't, and he has the capacity to dissolve it, and therefore he could hold them hostage by using this effective power of veto and influence policy. Why is that not possible?
I mean, technically, it's probably possible, except that you would then have a constitutional crisis and you would probably have attempts to sort of impeach him. Now, impeaching is very difficult, as we tried to impeach a few judges and got nowhere. But he doesn't understand the sort of the nature of what the office means. And, you know, presidents try to extend the office. We saw Mary Robinson try to extend it, Mary McAleese and Michael D. Higgins. But as I write in my own column today, the powers are simply not there. Then he talks about the housing crisis. That's in the gift of the government to solve, not the president. Michael D. Higgins called this the great crisis of our times. What did he call it? A disaster. And what did the government do? They said, we understand the president's comments and, you know, life goes on.
We will take it under advisement.
But he also has to sign off, as you say, but can he even hold a pen? Can he even hold a pen?
So what's the motivation then?
Well, here's the thing. I think if it was a popularity thing, why didn't he run for local election? Like the Monk, why didn't he put his name in the hat for that? He could have done that and he didn't. It's grandstanding, isn't it? We were saying outside as well how presidential candidates, I mean, everything is combed over. They go right back to things that you did in your 20s, you were saying here, and they'd find a parking ticket.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to go too far to find some mud on him, would they?
But if they are already, if he's already pushing the agenda that says, I am being silenced by the system and the government is trying to act against me, if he doesn't get the nomination, will we be facing into weeks of Elon Musk propaganda against Ireland?
This is the problem, and what I worry about is the perception around the world. I noticed, and John Mooney says it in the Times, he will cry foul, and he will cry foul internationally, spectacularly. I see poor old Dan Mulhall this morning was dragged into something on Twitter where he's trying to point out to somebody, a social influencer in the States who has 266,000 followers, that were not actually stopping him from freedom of speech, were not actually stopping him from election. They don't get it, they don't understand it, and he will milk that. He will use that for his brand. To bring that message, and that's what, you know, John talks about it in the Sunday Times. That is that's why MAGA embrace this issue. They want this mouth out there. They want this to fit into the general Trump message in the States about we're protecting free speech, the right to go for election, all of this stuff that they propel to the middle ground in America. You know, people say, why is Trump still following him? He attracts a certain middle ground in the state, whether we like it or not. He attracts it. You know, last night Trump broke away from Mar-a-Lago to go wrestling with a bunch of other guys who have similar issues in these areas with regard to previous criminal events. Why is he doing it? He is playing to his audience, and it is appalling, but this is where he's using the system.
And to some extent, we are now this weekend reaping what was sowed on Patrick's Day, because this is all a legacy of Conor McGregor being brought to the White House, him making comments about immigration. We've had a week-long debate about immigration created out of whole cloth that didn't exist previously, and now we have all of our newspapers dominated by
absolutely
McGregor.
And really what I think about people who crave attention is they are best ignored. But when on our national holiday a man like Conor McGregor is given a platform and an audience on the scale that he was on a day when usually our Taoiseach should be there with his bowl of shamrock. So it couldn't be ignored this time. I think it had to be caught. And also we're living in a strange time where facts and truth just don't matter anymore. But at the same time, I think very quickly things are starting to change already. I mean, Trump is doing exactly what he said he would do, faster than we could even ever have imagined. But there was a research during the week, 80% of Americans are now fearful about losing their jobs. 80%. And that's extraordinary. But yeah, so and here's the other thing: over 35 to run for president, he's only 36. That was one of the most surprising things to me.
We had a referendum, do you remember? There was a referendum.
Among the list of challenges he faces, I'm not sure his
is. Can I just say, we have to say kudos to the person who gave him the moniker Andrew Tato this week. I mean, it's on T-shirts now and tote bags already.
There was a referendum to reduce the age of nomination to 21. It was held on the same day as the same-sex marriage referendum.
But yes.
Everyone forgot about it, including people who should know about it like me. But it was rejected overwhelmingly, and we remain at it. Yeah, it was. Completely.
Overwhelmingly? Yeah. We all decided en masse that you need to be 35 for the responsibility.
But don't they say that the adult brain, especially the female brain, does mature faster than the male brain? And I think, is it 28 when the male brain, well, not in Conor McGregor's case, is fully functioned with empathy, with morals, with all of that, set in stone. So, yeah, it's
good reason not to let you into the auras until that point. Now, you point out the thing about the 80% of Americans concerned about their jobs. The other interesting story in all this is the Sunday Times suggesting that Musk is meddling in Irish politics. The meddling in US politics seems to be costing him greatly, because there's a lot of coverage this weekend. Tesla owners dumping their cars, Tesla share price going through the floor, vandalism in Tesla dealerships. It's quite the corporate upheaval, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there's two big issues for Musk in all of this. There's one, there's the demise of his company. It's going down the tubes. And there's a criminal campaign against him in the States. Let's be straight about it. That's outside of the law as well. But then secondly, and it's in the Sunday Times today, he's worried about those closest to him selling out as well. Elon Musk telling Tesla employees to hold on to their own stock at the moment. So confidence is obviously rock bottom. And he feels he will literally see his business going down the tubes. And I think, you know, it's ironic to me that he stands beside a US president who says, you know, that, you know, Europe has been so unfair to our car industry. And yet this guy here was selling cars into Europe. And Trump denied all this for a long time. Now, through tariffs, surprise, surprise, the idea of Mr. Trump, this may be affected as well down the road. So I think there's an incredibly false debate going on here. All I know is that the more I hear Trump talking about Elon Musk, the more I know Musk is in trouble. And I think we're going to come to a point, it has happened with Trump in the past, he will eventually, and I believe this personally, he will eventually dump Musk. The product will be so low and will be a loser that Trump will end his relationship with him. That's I'm sure what Musk is worrying about all the time. That's what he really is. Because look at it. What's in it for him at the moment? You know, his brand is on the way down. There's no doubt about it.
Do you know what to take from this as well? A positive outcome is we sometimes really underestimate people power and what we can, the power of one, if we all do decide to do the right thing. Because the Bezoses, the Musk of the world, they do think they're untouchable. And now look what's happening. It's falling apart because people are saying, no, I don't want to be part of it anymore.
Particularly, it seems in Europe. I mean, German Tesla sales.
Have you seen the stickers people have on their back of their Teslas now? I bought this before the current madness. I'm paraphrasing. You can get stickers for your Tesla now just to say, please, please, don't key my car.
Anybody bought them, given the nature of the man, even before politics.
There's a very good piece by Declan Lynch in the Sunday Indo, a very funny piece about Teslas and Musk. Going back to Kieran's point, Tesla owners are Republicans where there were Democrats, and of course Trump is a great skeptic about electronic cars, and his movement is very skeptical about anything that isn't like drill baby drill. So in that context, things have went sort of full circle. So Declan Lynch is very well worth to read this morning, I think.
Tech saying, agree with most of what has been said about McGregor today. What's interesting is the amount of people that said, I don't like McGregor, but I agree with what he said. And a lot of them sounded, quotes, normal stroke centrist. 53106, if you want to get in touch, 087-1400-106. The thing in all this, Gary, as a student of politics that I find interesting is, I would have thought that in any other context, if you had the interwoven set of vested interests that Musk has, given his current role in government, it would be regarded as abject corruption of the highest degree. If you have a business person in receipt of billions of dollars in state contracts who also has a seat at the government table, there's no other Western country where you could have that, is there?
No, not at all. And you wouldn't have in the United States, except we have this extraordinary individual in the White House who has broken all the norms in relation to A, getting elected in the first place, and B, actually doing what he said. I mean, tariffs are like, not to bore the listeners, but tariffs are the prerogative of Congress. Congress has the power in terms of taxing and tariffs of foreign nations and the like. He's just ignored all that because obviously the Republican Party is in complete enthrall to him. So we've seen some judges push back and stop some of the excesses of his executive orders. The Chief Justice was forced to come out last week to defend a justice of a lower court that Trump had basically said was corrupt, for pointing out the obvious that, sorry, Mr. President, there are many things you can do, but you can't do this. And back to Tesla, I mean, the idea of turning the White House into a Tesla showroom for a day, which is basically what President Trump did to boost his friend, really rinks of the worst type of jobbery.
In relation to one of the other billionaires mentioned this weekend in the papers, Maya, you made mention of him there, Jeff Bezos. Amazon.ie is getting an awful lot of attention because we finally have our own Amazon store and it seems to be doing a bomb.
Well, I was chatting to Gary or Kieran before we came in, and I don't want to sound us too self-righteous, but I'm about to. I avoid Amazon at all costs. I don't have the app. I don't buy on Amazon. Occasionally, I will download.
Where do you buy your bicycle pedals and your magnets?
Well, because of the optimization, when you look up anything, it brings you straight to Amazon. But I do. It came from a few years ago. I have a couple of friends who run very small businesses, and they have said, oh my God, this is crippling us. And if we're not visible on Amazon, we're just not selling. So I make the effort. Things like, for example, my son loves Lego. I looked up the discontinued Lego set, found it on Amazon. Then I made the effort, took me 10 minutes, and I found it available in a shop in Ireland. And it was €8 more, but actually the postage was less. So I know it sounds very sanctimonious, but I do make the effort to avoid. I don't like what they do. I don't like what they stand for. I don't like how they treat their drivers. The idea that you need something by tomorrow as well, it's just extraordinary. We need to move away from all of that. And I've been pushing back against Amazon.ie. It's a disaster.
But Bezos' argument is that he allows access for small businesses because they can use the Amazon platform as a reseller of their stuff. And therefore, if you're clever, you can use it as a way to amplify your revenues rather than impact
your revenues. There's plenty of ways to do that. Like, the internet doesn't just apply to Amazon. I mean, there's so many other small online places where you can sell things. And even now with social media, you have direct links to buying your own, to your own small stores. And there are other kind of cooperative online places where you can sell your wares. But for far...
Has your boycott brought him to his knees yet?
It has. It has, yeah. I know, he's quaking in his boots. He's quaking in his boots.
He is apparently now... Amazon has overtaken Walmart to be the largest retailer, I think, on the planet by revenue.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. The business... he knows the business plan he's involved in, but I'm gonna agree with Moy on this. I really can't cope with the online issue when it comes to these. I'm one of these people who also goes to the store, whether it's providers along with us, but I knock on the counter and say, God, I want to see the product. I want to see what it was. I want to see, does it actually fit? Normally I bring the component from the washing machine with me to make sure it actually fits into it. That's how hopeless I am. So definitely I'm one of the people who believes it would, in the long term, it would be a threat to local industry, to the small shop. And for that reason, I won't be one of the people signing up for the account.
Gary's keeping his head down. He's obviously a huge Amazon.
I have an Amazon account. I use it for books, for my Kindle, for reading my fiction books rather than, I buy books as well.
Oh, you read on a tablet, do you?
I read on a tablet on the bus. So when everyone is scrolling through their phones, hopefully reading books, I tend to have a little Kindle with me. And it's easy to stick in my pocket. But I read, you know, and I've written obviously physical books, and I like physical books. But I use Amazon. And so I'm not afraid to say it this morning.
Unbelievable.
A text saying Tesla stock is still higher than it was this time last year, and 8 times higher than it was 5 years ago. This is a fine point. It may be half what it was a couple of months ago, but it is significantly higher than it was a couple of years ago.
Have you driven a Tesla, by the way? Do you, in terms of your test driving?
No. Yes, you have.
Never driven.
And just one other thing that's changed from 5 years ago, Anton, I've seen this on the Times, is that the top investor, Ross Gerber, has apparently called him, must have stepped down. So that's this is the serious stuff. Whether the stock, rather where the stock is, if he's losing his key people around him, he's in trouble.
Another one saying, keep sneering about McGregor. The Democrats made the same mistake in the US. And another from actually Councillor Tom O'Leary saying, the political pact controlling Fingal County Council, FFFG Labour Green, would not entertain Conor McGregor as a suitable candidate for president. And I suspect there would be a lot of councils.
And pretty much every other council, I think, would have the same view.
But we're going to have the sideshow. I'm convinced we're going to have the sideshow. We will have this event. He will say he was denied the opportunity. He'll traipse up the corridor to Roscommon County Council, every place else, and he will try and hype up this voice, which we do hear, and we have heard. Let's be honest about it. We have heard it this week in some areas. It may be a minority. They may not have councillors. But I would be concerned that down the road this will lead to this group actually having elected people. That's one of the problems. He has
either way, we'll get the I was cancelled by the woke mob thing. 5316, if you want to get in touch, right, 7-1400-106. Coming up after the break, we'll find out how RTE justifies spending 900 quid on dress rental. We have whiled away the break to the sound of Gary Murphy reading about RTE expenditure on clothing with ever more shock and astonishment as he hit the numbers as he went through the piece in the Sunday Times. RTE spending 250,000 a year on high-end outfits for screen stars. Some of it, judging by the gasps during the break, Gary, stood out for you.
Yeah, I mean, Louis Copeland's doing very well out of them. 58,000 for suits and other clothes. Morning Ireland, 6,900 now, as we know. I've been on Morning Ireland the odd old time. It's a radio show. It's on. There is a web camera, but I can't imagine too many people are... it's a huge listenership in most people driving and in their cars. No, there's a big listenership for Shane and Kira's show as well.
Listener, though, being the operative word.
Being the operative word. No, Maya said and will speak more eloquently than me. It means clearly RT needs to spend some money on in terms of clothing for presenters and the like. I mean, the late
Morning Ireland.
No, not Morning Ireland is my point, but I mean for some.
But they only dress from the waist up. I know that for a fact.
there was about 1,700 for the GAA All Stars and 1,300 for the 2023 Rugby World Cup tournament. I assume that's for the presenters, but it does. I mean, it's a great story by Ken Fox in a few of the papers. RT spends a quarter of a million a year on high end outfits for screen stars. RT tried to not have this information available, but they were overruled in terms of a freedom of information brought by the redoubtable Ken Fox, who many listeners will know as a journalist of some tenacity and in these matters.
Well, this explains what happened to Kieran Mullooly, because I noticed that his sartorial elegance fell off a cliff when he departed.
Firstly, Mr. Savage, a declaration of product placement. I worked in RTE for 25 years. For 15 of those years, I got a wardrobe allowance.
Did you?
Yes.
Can you tell us of how much?
Yes, indeed. And I can tell you what I spent it on. To wellies, waders, overcoats and jackets as I waded my way through the floods of the Midlands. It came about, came in at about 600 or 700 euros. After tax, it was always under 500. Remember that?
A year?
Well, per year. One per year. That's what we got. Which is why I'm a little bit surprised when I read in this list about a spend of around 6,400 euros for those luxury bespoke tailor suits from Tom Sweeney's in London, one of which I never got. And I would make one serious point about it. I mean, a lot of the
people... This is for the Late Late, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a Late Late Show bill. And, you know, we're back to this thing about what was going on during Ryan Tuberty's time, etc. To be consistent, I have to say that if you're paying the presenter of the programme a quarter of a million euro, you certainly shouldn't be paying for his suits, if they are his suits. So maybe you ought to clarify who did they buy the 6,400 euro suits for in London? Because clearly, this was the issue last year. We pay, RTE says they have to maintain talent. They've got to pay the big bucks to keep them. That's why Patrick Keelty is there. He's doing a good job by all accounts. Most people say so. But at the end of the day, are they still buying his suits?
A wardrobe department is standard for TV shows. I mean, obviously, and like I say, we have to have a certain standard. The Late Late Show is our flagship chat show. You can't have, I mean, you wouldn't have Paddy going out buying his own suits. I do understand that. No, but when it comes to things like there was...
Why not?
Why would he not go and buy his own suits?
Why would he not go and buy his own?
Because
how would the world end if he had to buy his own suits?
There is actually, there's a technical thing as well about not buying certain colours or stripes or things that will strobe on camera. I mean, don't underestimate the wardrobe department and what they do.
If you're talking Dancing with the Staff and you want them to go out in very fancy outfits, yes, of course.
Actually, Dancing the Stars, because I did that show, you may remember, about 25 years ago. And that wasn't even mentioned, as I don't think. But actually, the glittery sequin dresses all come secondhand from Strictly.
Do they?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
no.
Yeah, there's a lot of gussets need washing when they come over. Those dresses are, I mean, they're well-structured, I can tell you. But they are brought over and they're hired.
Secondhand stuff out of the UK.
Yeah, because I had people saying, well, that was my dress. That was
6,005.
Hang on, Gary's back on it.
No, last year's bill for Dancing with the Stars came to 6,500 with most of the items bought from department store Arnott's,
yeah,
River
that's
Island
for the presenters.
And Nick's.
That'll be presenters and the judges. But all the ones that stand out, the actual sequins and the glitz and glamour and tassels, they all come from...
But my point being, you could understand in that kind of shiny floor production where you might need to have a big wardrobe budget and wardrobe would be a requirement, but to just be standard TV presenting? To present more than Ireland?
I think wardrobe for radio is ludicrous. That's just silly. That's comical. But I think for the Late Late Show, for the big TV shows, now look, I don't work for RTE. I've never earned any money of note from RTE, so I've no skin in the game.
Do they ever give you a dress?
But do they ever give me a dress? No. And I made 12 documentaries and there was no wardrobe budget. So I would put on dresses backwards and put an apron on and just stick a flyer on it. But you can't be doing that for the
Late
Late
Show. To me, I say the issue, if there is an issue in the article, would be at the upper end, who's getting the free gear or the gear bought for them. Because, you know, as I know from the newsroom, most of the people were paid 30,000, 40,000 euro. That was the average salary. They weren't getting the wardrobe allowance in the newsroom. And they were on TV.
They would all gone to you and your
wellies. They were in the field, so to speak. But I just really think they're into dangerous territory again if they're going to the upper end.
Absolutely. And you have to apply common sense. If somebody is on a six-figure salary, then
the bit that stood out to me, though, in this, Mayan, sorry to cut across you, but I will do it nonetheless. The hire of two dresses for Captain Thomas, No Better Woman, who presented the Rose of Tralee, came to 908 euro. Not the purchase of two dresses. Hiring. How do you hire two dresses for 900 euro?
I don't know. That's sort of anathema
normal
to me. No, I don't. It's awful. And also, for a show like the Rose of Tralee, which is a very high-profile show, I'd imagine the audience is huge. Now, I don't think anyone should have to work for free, designers included, but if the producer went out and said, we'd like to showcase Irish talent, I have no doubt that Irish designers would lend a dress or two to Catherine and Di if he wants to wear a dress or a suit. And then they could have them back dry cleaned. But I don't know.
He has lovely legs.
He does have lovely legs.
Tech saying, I 100% agree with your guest, that guest being Maya. I only buy local or Irish shops online. Let's move away from Amazon. Another, if you've ever watched the recent Netflix documentary on Amazon, Shine and other, is it Shine? And other online shopping sites, you'd never buy anything off them ever again. Their business practices, the environmental impact, it'd put you off for life. and a text asking, no way all these clothes go into the RT wardrobe, do they? So do the presenters end up keeping them? Well, that isn't detailed as to where they ultimately end up. Do they stay on a rack somewhere downstairs in Montrose, or do they go home with the presenters?
No, a lot of them are hired, I think. After just getting back to the previous text, there's a real disconnect amongst younger generations who are very concerned with the climate, and they all have their Keep cups, but they're buying off, is it Shein or Shine, whatever it's called, on Amazon. You know, and the damage there is far worse than a couple of coffee cups.
The fast fashion issue.
Shein is extraordinarily bad.
It's a fashion retailer. Is that what it is? Oh. Yeah. In other news, the front of the Business Post, Kieran, your reaction to this. It's a story saying paralysed, vital projects in jeopardy as court cases spike. Now, this fits in the continuing sort of drumbeat of stories relating to how difficult it is to get anything built with our planning and judicial system. Developers being quoted in this story saying, by the time you navigate all the legal challenges, your planning permission has expired.
Yeah, and I mean, this is huge. I mean, housing is obviously one of the key ones at the centre of all this. I'm a vice chair of a housing committee in Europe, and I did a recent interview, was talking out loud. I said, it's wrecking my head before I start, because there are so many issues that the state has got to sort out first. I'll give you an example. Kieran Mulvey, well-respected former guy in the Labour Court and all these things, was given a job to come to the Midlands and spend a lot of money. 68 million was the budget originally, I think. And he came back after about 6 months and says, I can do nothing. I can't start a new factory. I can't start this because of the planning process, because it's so slow, because you've got 3 months here, you have an appeal process. And there are so many obstacles that the state puts in their place. It's a huge issue for this country. One of the reasons why one of the jobs I've been doing in Europe is trying to come up with special zones in the country where we, for once, we decide we need to get the work done. If it's a special area of Dublin, for instance, where we have housing, is a huge, which part of Dublin is not an area, but, you know, if it's a specific area of the country where we've got to abandon our planning laws, we've got to ease them up, we've got to create a shortcut, we've got to do it. If it's a housing crisis in this country, it's a crisis. If people are staying, and I'll just give you one example, Anton. People, I went to Navan to talk to people about housing 2 weeks ago. Vincent DePaul came to the gig, and Vincent DePaul, who I know for years, do a lot of work, they told me in the past they did food and fuel in Navan. Now they do rent. And they're providing rent subsistence to couples, both of whom are working. Now, what is going on in our country? How have we got to that point? And in those cases, I am saying that we really have to, and you know, some people won't like this. Civil libertarians will be saying you can't just scrap all the rules. But if the state owns lands around the countries, we have to start building short term. We cannot go down these 2 year waits or 12 months made for them. If it's a crisis, it's a crisis. So I think, and our government, at the end of the day, one last thing about it, our government are saying they're going to attack this year. In the past, we've seen people like Lamass and Donogh O'Malley, somebody's going to have to stand up and make a name for themselves here. They're going to have to stand up and say, we are bringing forward emergency legislation to deal with this problem. And
there's noises being made about that, though, with housing czars and speculations. Yeah, who's going to take that role?
Well, the Business Post, the story by Killian Woods and Laura Roddy, Anton, talks of Brendan McDonagh, the NRMA chief executive, is in the mix to become the government's new housing czar. Now, in my own column today, I reference Owen Murphy's recent memoir, where he takes a lot of the blame for the housing crisis, and we've been using the word crisis for like over a decade now, relation to housing, on his own plate. But he also talks about a strangely disinterested Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. And in my own column today, I said, look, this is on Micheál Martin, really. He's the Taoiseach of the country. He knows the issues. He knows the problems. He's been in the Dáil since 1989. And I mean, I think this is obviously probably his last time as Taoiseach. He's got now 2.5 years or so. And the legacy needs to be, you know, that he's the man who got it fixed. I mean, the buck does stop with him. And the thing about Murphy's memoir was that for all the difficulties around planning, regulation, finance, political will is a huge issue. And I agree with Kieran that we do need a Lamass for the 2020s. And Micheál Martin has that opportunity. He has it within him, I think, because he knows the rules.
53106 at a cost of 30 cents if you want to get in touch. 087 1400 106 if you want to use WhatsApp. The other story, issue, person that gets coverage this weekend is the late Eddie Jordan, the front page of the Business Post, saying business acumen and restlessness fueled his brilliance. And there will be a certain generation who will remember what it was like to see Irish Formula One cars not only racing in the pinnacle of single speed motorsport, but doing really well at the pinnacle of single speed motorsport, all of the way up to the point in 1999 where they won their first ever Grand Prix.
And the Irish national anthem for the Jordan team. Well done, Nadeem. His Excellency, the Ambassador for Tourism there, Mr. Edmund Jordan, in tears. That's the second lot of tears we've seen in Italy, both for very good but for very different reasons.
That was Eddie Jordan. If the footage shows him both weeping and roaring Aaron Neveen at the French Grand Prix when Jordan won their first ever Grand Prix, which was just it was a remarkable achievement at the time. It would still be a remarkable achievement to get a Grand Prix team off the ground from a standing start. You met Eddie Jordan on occasion, Maya?
I wasn't going to tell this story. I wouldn't.
So no choice now.
That wouldn't be. You know, I could see your face light up. Anything to do with cars and engines and things moving fast is very much your area. I know that. But no, somebody had said, did you ever meet him? Very, very briefly in passing. Excuse me. I would have. When I was in college, my part-time job was in a petrol station out in Dalkey. So I met all of the great and the good of Dalkey. And after work one day, we were in a local pub. I think I probably had my Shell sweatshirt with kind of help you on it. And Eddie Irvine, his pal, came over and decided to try and have a go. Divil for the girls, as he was back then.
Eddie Irvine? No.
Yes, can you imagine?
I can't believe that.
Now, I couldn't get away fast enough, and that is the truth. But Eddie Jordan was there, and he wandered over, and I was there with a friend, and he just sort of said, now, girls, essentially he was saying, mind yourselves now. Wanted to make sure that we just kind of got off okay. So that was my only interaction with him. Lovely man, by all accounts.
It was great to listen to the dulcet tones of Murray Walker in the clip you played. And there are two great pieces in the papers today. One by Liam Collins in the Sindo. He never rested. He had the energy of a nuclear power station about Eddie. And Danny McConnell, who's a great motor racing fan, the editor of the Business.
It's a fabulous piece by Danny, isn't it?
By Danny, great piece. Business acumen and restless nature behind the brilliance of Eddie Jordan. And it was an extraordinary life to come from nothing, let's say, face it, in a racing backwater, notwithstanding people like yourself and others in Mandela Park, to, you know, winning a Formula 1 and 2. And they nearly won way back in 1991. Do you remember? They were like, didn't it? Petrol ran out in the last lap for, I can't remember which of the drivers it was, but it was
And also, the fact that it was always so skinny your teeth, the pulling Michael Schumacher in and then having Benetton whip him after one race. Having to replace drivers because they assaulted somebody the day before the F1.
His influence, I mean, that's the thing. I know very little about Formula 1, but his influence seems incredible. Colin McGurk tells us in the Mail, Irish Mail on Sunday, that in a previous life he used to write music reviews and guides for the evening press under the name of Jordash. So here we have the evening press radio.
I didn't know that.
Music critic can go into this scenario, can get the investors, get the money, get the drivers, Schumacher and Damon Hill in the early days. It's an incredible story, and it is great when we hear the tributes. You know, I think you mentioned the Bono tribute yesterday. I listened to the tributes from the people, the real racing driving people, and they take their hat off because it was a really difficult time, and he got it together and he put us on the world stage.
There's so much begrudgery in Ireland, but there seems to be just universal like for him. He seems to be universally liked, and it's so nice to see the accolades and all the lovely stories coming out. Only 76 as well. That's very...
And not only that, 76, but active right to the end. There are stories, I think the Business Post coverage says that he was in the middle of a deal to try to buy the London Irish ground only a couple of months ago. So that restlessness still defining him right to the end. A text saying, check with Patrick Keelty. He's been wearing the same two outfits for the entirety of time on the lately. Somebody give Paddy a new suit. He could borrow it off one of the lads of Morn Ireland if need be. 53106 if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. It is the Anton Savage Show, as always, 10 to 12 on Sunday and 9 to 11 on Saturday. My panel this morning, Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government in Dublin City University. Kieran Mullooly, Independent Ireland MEP and broadcaster and writer, Maya Dunphy.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.